The scripture lesson today is from the book of Psalms 96, verses 1 through 9. Oh, sing to the Lord a new song. Sing to the Lord, all the earth. Sing to the Lord. Bless his name. Tell of his salvation from day to day. Declare his glory among the nations, his marvelous works among all the peoples. For great is the Lord and greatly to be praised. He is to be revered above all gods. For all the gods of the peoples are idols, but the Lord made the heavens. Honor and majesty are before him. Strength and beauty are in his sanctuary. Ascribe to the Lord, O families of the peoples, ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. Ascribe to the Lord the glory due his name. Bring an offering and come into his courts. Worship the Lord in holy splendor. Tremble before him, all the earth. So ends the reading.
Thank you, Sue. Strong women of the Bible. In today's bulletin, we've got some extra little handouts, inserts. Here we have chapter 1 of Matthew, the first book of the New Testament, the first chapter of the New Testament is the genealogy of Jesus. And I've highlighted in red some of the ancestresses of Jesus, some of the ladies that are in his family line. You don't really have to pay much more attention to that than to know that these ladies turned up in this part of the Bible. Now, I've got quite a picture gallery today. For those who aren't here too often, we always have some kind of a picture on the front of the bulletin that has something to do with a sermon. Today it has a lot to do with a sermon. I forgot to put Tamar on the front of the bulletin. Oh, I need to comment on the front of the bulletin too. Those of you, we've got quite a few of Penny's students here today. And you'll remember that she used to help with the yearbook. And so she was the perfect person when I went to her with all my assorted pictures to put them together in some reasonable fashion on the front of them, because these pictures didn't exactly, they came off the internet, of course, but they didn't come in exactly the right sizes. And so some of them were made bigger and some of them were made smaller. And then they were put together in some kind of a okay look. And Penny did that. But I forgot about Tamar. And so here she is. So this is Tamar and her father-in-law meeting at the side of the road where Tamar had been waiting for him. Tamar was married to Judah, that's Judah that she's waiting for, that's her father-in-law. She'd been married to his eldest son, Ur. When Ur died, there was a marriage deal with Judah's son number two, Onan. But that marriage deal is off when Onan dies. So Judah tells Tamar to wait, and then she can marry Shelah, his third son, when he grows up. But when Judah procrastinates, Tamar takes matters into her own hands. She puts on a very heavily veiled disguise, waits for him at the side of the road. She gets together with Judah, her father-in-law, and she gets the child that she was due from one of his sons. Tamar gives birth to twins. One twin, Perez, who is her son by Judah, her father-in-law, is an ancestor of Jesus. I've already lost my genealogy. So here is an ancestor of Jesus, Tamar. Judah, of course, traces his line back to his father, Jacob, his grandfather, Isaac, and his great-great-grandfather, Abraham. And of course, that's where our genealogy began, was with Abraham. So that is Tamar. Now we need to take a look at Rahab. She's number three. It's the only black and white picture we have. Rahab is also in that ancestral line. Rahab was a working woman with a large extended family. She lived in Jericho. Her house, like many others, was built against the wall that went around the outside of the city. The city wall, thus providing a wall for one side of her house. Now Moses had died at the very door to the promised land, and now Joshua was leading the Hebrews. He sent two spies into Canaan because they were on their way to Canaan. They were going to conquer Canaan and move in. These spies were at Rahab's family's inn when the authorities realized there were spies in the territory. And Rahab decided it was probably best to side with the Hebrew spies. So when the authorities came searching, she hid the spies under bundles of flax, and she later showed them an escape through a window of the house that went through the outer wall. And they went down by a rope. In exchange for saving them, the spies promised safety to her and her family when Jericho was attacked. Only she must hang a red cord out of the window to show which was her house. Rahab did as she was told, hung the red cord out of the window, gathered her family around her, and they were all safe when the walls of Jericho came tumbling down. Later, Rahab marries Salmon and has Boaz, who was then an ancestor of Jesus. Number six. Ruth. Ruth and Naomi. Older lady, younger lady. Ruth is a widow, so is Naomi. Ruth, even though she was a Moabite woman, and the Moabites and the Israelites didn't usually meet up. They were at war with each other a good deal of the time in this ancient history. Even though Ruth was a Moabite woman, she's been steadfast staying with her widowed mother-in-law, Naomi, when Naomi goes back to her own homeland of Israel. The two women are really down and out, but they stay alive by getting enough food by gleaning. And the holiness code of Israel told farmers to leave the corners of their fields unharvested. It was an early form of welfare for widows, strangers, orphans. So fortunately, Boaz, who was the son of Rahab, who had let the people out the window, her son now has become a rich landowner, and he favors Ruth. They marry and have a child who is an ancestor of Jesus. So remember, we're talking about the strong women. Tamar has her way of getting the child that she needs to have because that was necessary in that culture. Rahab harbors spies, and of course that would have been death-dealing for her. Ruth goes with her mother-in-law into a country where they hate the Moabites, but she survives. We move on to Bathsheba. Number seven. We see a picture of Bathsheba, very famous. She's bathing on the roof of her housetop. David happens to walk by on the rooftop of his house. Well, anyway. Bathsheba is identified in the genealogy as wife of Uriah. Uriah has died in battle, so she marries King David. This is an involved story from the books of Samuel. Love, war, betrayal. And Bathsheba is a strong woman. She manages to wangle the inheritance of the kingship out of her husband, King David, for her own son, Solomon, even though David had an older son who was the rightful inheritor. So we see Bathsheba bathing on the rooftop, and David happens to be somewhere where he can see her. You kind of have to wonder how that all came to be. Number one, Rebecca. Our picture shows Rebecca giving water to Abraham's servant. It's a servant who's come there. Here she is, a very young woman, and the servant has come looking for a wife for Isaac, Abraham's son. That's the Isaac that didn't get sacrificed. Rebekah's brother is consulted, and Rebekah agrees to go to marry Isaac. Rebekah and Isaac have twin sons, Esau and Jacob. Esau, the elder, is favored by his father. Jacob, younger, favored by the mother. And this woman, who was unafraid to go to a foreign land to marry Isaac, has no problem in ensuring through some imposturing that her favorite child, the younger, Jacob, gains the blessing and inheritance of the by now elderly Isaac. Picture number two, Leah and Rachel, they're sisters. Leah is the elder, Rachel the younger. Now Jacob, favorite child of Rebekah, hope I'm not losing you, I probably am, because Rebekah was up here in the top left-hand corner of your picture. Her favorite child finds Rachel at the well, and it is love at first sight. He wants to marry Rachel and agrees to work for 7 years to be able to marry her. Then he's tricked into marrying the older sister first, Leah. But he does get to marry Rachel too. So Leah, Rachel, and their two handmaidens have 13 children with Jacob. Rachel takes her life in her hands when she hides the household idols that symbolize Jacob's right to his earnings from her father. So that was a very scary thing for her to do. The father comes chasing after them, and they're on their way back home again, back to Israel. And her father comes after them, is going to catch them, and because the household idols are gone, and they symbolize the flocks that, and the ownership and the rightful inheritorship that by this time Jacob has. So she hides them, and if she's found hiding these, it would be death to her. But she does it successfully in an Old Testament kind of way. Picture number four, we see Deborah with her arm outstanded. Deborah was a judge. She's from the book of Judges. She's not a judge as we think of a judge, though judgments came into it too. A judge was a leader, wise in making decisions, sometimes arbitrating between people, sometimes fighting in battles, sometimes urging the fighters on, unafraid of attacking, marching right into the thick of things. In the Bible, book of Judges, Deborah led a military battle and won against superior Canaanite forces. So Deborah's story goes right on into the story of Jael, picture number five. Now Jael is doing just what it looks like she's doing there. When the superior Canaanite forces were routed, thanks to Deborah, Sisera, the Canaanite commander, ran away. Now Jael was there. She wasn't an Israelite, but she was sympathetic to the Israelites. So she invites the running away commander of the other army into her tent, and she gives him a drink of milk. It says that in the Bible. She gives him a drink of milk. And he's exhausted from his fighting because Deborah's just beaten up his army, and he falls asleep. So since he's the enemy commander, Jael does what she does. She drives a tent stake through his head. So two women are the winners of this battle. Deborah wins the battle, and Jael kills the rival commander. Number eight, Judith. That's a picture from the Sistine Chapel by Michelangelo. The story of Judith is from the Apocrypha. There are books of the Bible that are accepted by Catholics but not included in our Protestant Bibles. So this is from the Catholic Bible. Judith is a beautiful woman. In fact, all of these women are beautiful, always wonderful. She's trapped with the rest of the people in her besieged town, and the town has run out of everything. They're ready to give up. But Judith says, wait, I have a plan. She dresses in her finest clothes and jewelry. She's outstandingly beautiful. She takes her slave woman and a sack full of kosher, acceptable food, and leaves the safety of that town for the enemy camp. The two women are stopped by sentries, but Judith tells them she has secret information for their commander, Holofernes. Holofernes is very taken with her great beauty. So she and her slave woman are given a tent to stay in. And for 3 days they are in camp, going out every night to wash in the nearby stream. By the third night, Holofernes has decided that he must seduce this beautiful woman. He invites her to eat with him in his tent. She goes, but will only eat from her bag of ritually pure food. Now, Holofernes is very sure of himself, and he celebrates with wine, too much wine. When he passes out, Judas takes his sword from its scabbard and cuts off Holofernes' head. She puts the head into her food sack, and she and her slave woman leave the camp as usual, and the sentries have become accustomed to them doing so. And of course, instead of going back to the camp, they return to their town, taking the bag with them. Judas has saved the day. Without their leader, the enemy forces are easily routed. That's a strong woman. We've got Eve on the inside of the cover, the mother of us all. Eve gets a lot of bad press for eating of the tree of knowledge. The trade-off may or may not have been worth it. There are those who believe an unthinking world of eating wild fruit would be a Garden of Eden. And there are those who believe that the ability to think, reason, understand, make plans for the future, and remember the past is worth the effort of living in the wider world. And so, these are some of the strong women of the Bible. The Bible has a reputation for being a patriarchal book, a book about a patriarchal society. A patriarch is a man who rules a family, clan, or tribe. He's the head, the chief, the CEO. I think that is true. The Bible also has a reputation for keeping women in a very subjugated and submissive position. I don't think that is true. The very fact that the Bible chooses to include these stories of strong, wily, and influential women tells us that they must have had influential roles in their society. There were also bad women, just as there were bad men with powerful influence. Think Jezebel, the murderess, wife of King Ahab. Think Delilah, the beautiful Philistine who discovered the strength of our hero, Samson. The Samson who killed 1,000 Philistines with his only weapon being a donkey's jawbone. It is possible to pick and choose your way through the Bible to find verses that tell women to remain silent in church. This provides a basis for some churches to not allow women to participate actively in services. It is possible to pick and choose your way through the Bible to find verses against same-sex love, though those people tend to overlook the strong relationship between David and Jonathan, David, a major hero of the Old Testament and an ancestor of Jesus. It is possible to pick and choose your way through the Bible to find verses that support slavery, though those people tend to overlook Galatians that say there is neither slave nor free, for you are all one in Jesus Christ. The pickers and choosers love to quote Bible verses to prove their point. They ignore the massive information contained in the Bible that contradicts the interpretation of their isolated quotes. The Bible needs to be taken as a whole, not bits and pieces taken out of context and elaborated upon in self-serving ways. I think today's exploration of biblical women serves as proof that our book shows women in roles that were far from submissive. The Bible obviously has a great appreciation for the strong ladies. They are connivers. They are deceitful. They are murderesses. The biblical authors applaud these women, accepting the idea that the ends justify the means. We may or we may not agree with that, but there is no doubt but that there are strong women in the Bible. Amen.